another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And I know. We should have heard that earlier in the show. But we had some technical difficulties. The technical difficulties do not involve my transport. I am back from the Passover retreat in which I was participating for the previous 8 days, and I am back home in Seattle, but the machines that we depend on to do the first segment of the show, actually we depend on them to do all of the segments of the show. The machines don't do them, they just transmit what I am saying to you, but right now what I'm saying to you is what I really am here live doing after some, about 15 minutes, 20 minutes of intense frustration trying to get everything connected. So out there, hey, everybody hear me? A little bit of a sore throat, but not too bad. No, good, because I want people to hear, because there is so much going on in the news. There is an amazing interview with Donald Trump that I want to get to, because it's shockingly positive. And it's from Time magazine. And it talks about what Trump's agenda, he says, really would be if he becomes president, of which there is very real possibility. They make the point that what emerged in two interviews from Trump and conversations with more than a dozen of his closest advisors and confidants were the outlines of an imperial presidency that would reshape America and its role in the world. To carry out a deportation operation designed to remove more than 11 million people from the country, Trump told me, and this is a piece by Eric Cortalesa, Trump told me he would be willing to build migrant detention camps across the country and deploy the U.S. military both at the border and inland. He would let red states monitor women's pregnancies and prosecute those who violate abortion bans. He would, at his personal discretion, withhold funds appropriated by Congress, according to top advisors. That was something that Nixon tried to do, but it never worked out because of the traditional constitutional balance. He would be willing to fire a U.S. attorney who doesn't carry out his order to prosecute someone breaking with a tradition of independent law enforcement that dates from America's founding. He is weighing pardons for every single one of his supporters accused of attacking the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, 2021, more than 800 of whom have pleaded guilty or been convicted by a jury. He might not come to the aid of an attacked ally in Europe or Asia if he felt that country wasn't paying enough for its own defense. He would gut the U.S. Civil Service, deploy the National Guard to American cities as he sees fit, close the White House Pandemic Preparedness Office, and staff his administration with acolytes who back his false assertion that the 2020 election was stolen. Well, that's just a beginning. But you know what? What is so very obvious reading some of this material and some of the comments by Donald Trump is he would much prefer to talk about his potential agenda for what he hopes will be his second term than he would like to talk about the progress of the hush money trial. My sense, and just being around more than 800 people, and yes, it was not a representative group. It was a group that was mostly Orthodox Jewish people, and most of whom were very positive toward Donald Trump. But the level of interest or concern or worry about the trial that is going on in New York is just about zero. What is a big concern? It's something where Trump really hasn't spoken out that clearly, which is the ongoing breakdown at colleges and universities and the anti-Israel, pro-Hamas demonstrations around the country that seem to be shocking everyone with their fairly open expressions of anti-Semitism. And the Fox News reports universities crack down on anti-Israel agitators as protesters call for amnesty. Universities across the U.S. are cracking down on anti-Israel protesters who have taken over their campuses this week. The protesters demand the colleges divest themselves from companies connected to Israel. This week has seen dozens of arrests at Columbia, Yale, and elsewhere. UCLA has been a particular hotspot recently. The students who are taking this activism, and some of them should be and will be and have been expelled, dropped from whatever prestigious college they got into. Because if you are going to then use that opportunity that you have been given, that's been open to you, to foment this kind of craziness. This is a Columbia student who was questioned about how the school was, quote, blocking her access to food and water and demanding humanitarian aid, not for the people in Gaza, but for the people in Columbia Plaza in New York City. Here's what she sounded like, clip five.
Why should the university be obligated to provide food to people who've taken over a building?
First of all, we're saying that they're obligated to provide food to students who pay for a meal plan here.
But you mentioned that there was a request that food and water be brought in, unless I misunderstood.
To allow it to be brought in. I mean, well, I guess it's ultimately a question of what kind of community and obligation Columbia feels it has to its students. Do you want students to die of dehydration and starvation or get severely ill, even if they disagree with you? If the answer is no, then you should allow basic, I mean, it's crazy to say because we're on an Ivy League campus, but this is like basic humanitarian aid we're asking for. Like, could people please have a glass of water?
But they did put themselves in that, very deliberately, in that situation and in that position. So it seems like you're sort of saying, we want to be revolutionaries, we want to take up this building. Now would you please bring us food and water?
Nobody's asking them to bring anything. We're asking them to not violently stop us from bringing in basic humanitarian aid.
Okay. Basically, their contract that she alluded to is a contract to eat at university dining halls. And no one is stopping them. No one is saying, oh no, this one is not allowed to come in and eat lunch or dinner or breakfast. Because they've been identified as being out there on the quad and being part of these pro-Hamas demonstrators. They want to eat, and they have paid money to eat. Yes, they have a right to eat. But what right do they have to violate general rules and to bring in a volume of food to keep them fed while they're camping out on the quad? All I can think of is what some of the parents must feel like who have made so many sacrifices and invested so much money to send people to these august institutions. More on this sweeping disease that is infecting the country. It's something of a pandemic. That and more coming up on the MedVed Show. And on the Michael Medved Show, what is astonishing to me is that there are some people out there who are defending some of the pro-Hamas demonstrators. And anyone who is pretending, no, they're pro-Palestinian, they're not just pro-Hamas. All that they are supporting is the segment of the Palestinian, quote, struggle that is involved in Gaza that is controlled by Hamas. Palestinian Authority in the West Bank and what is called the West Bank, what Israelis call Yehuda and Shomron, Judea and Samaria, people who live in that area and basically live nearby some 700,000 Jewish residents of that area, And yes, of course, there has been all kinds of conflict and some violence and some protesters on the settler side of things who have committed crimes and property destruction. But the idea that what these demonstrations are about has anything to do with other than protecting Hamas and helping Hamas prevent releasing the hostages. And there's another Columbia University protester who was locked herself in a building with others and ended up getting surrounded and arrested by police, more than 300 arrested in New York, and which is pretty big riot is what it is. And again, not quite as big as January 6th, not as big as the riots that were also terribly handled back in 2020, after the killing of George Floyd. This entire thing is quite mad. And that Columbia protester who locked herself in the building after getting surrounded by police, she commented on some of the hardship which she has been required to endure. Clip 15.
They just barricaded us.
Oh, my
God.
No
way.
You
know, it's finals. Can I go home?
Okay. It's finals. Can I go home? And the answer is yes, but you might want to finish your finals first. And again, what is so astonishing to this, and one of the reasons I think that this is touching a sore point all across the country, is because when you're talking about the cost of tuition and room and board at universities like Columbia, you're talking about nearly $100,000 a year, $80,000 a year or more. And when Americans read about people who are lucky enough, sometimes they get scholarship aid, sometimes they get special government grants, to go ahead and have this opportunity to go to a very prestigious university. And what they're doing instead is using their time to support murderous terrorists who most Americans do not support. It's appalling. I'll tell you the best perspective. Certainly one of the best perspectives I've heard on this came from Bill Maher. He talked, offered a monologue that is unforgettable and I think spot on regarding these campus protests. Listen.
I'm not saying there aren't sincere passions about Gaza, especially among people from the region, but social justice warriors, for a lot of them, it seems like it's more about the warrioring than about whatever the cause is. Are you really speaking truth to power, or do you just think you look cool in a cafeya? Which is really just the new Che Guevara t-shirt. Another historical figure you never researched and so think is a hero, but was actually a sadistic, racist monster fighting for communism, the worst form of government ever. But these are small matters. Small matters when activism merges with narcissism. Less about the cause and more about me. Look at me. Watch me. And if you like the way I'm fighting injustice, remember to like and subscribe. Maybe from now on, before anyone commits an act of civil disobedience, they should ask themselves a few questions, like, is the most important thing in my life something I hadn't heard of 6 months ago? Do I even know what the I'm talking about?
And why do they care so much about this issue and not worse injustices? Listen.
Am I really here for the cause, or is the cause here to bring you me? Why do I care so much about this particular cause? North Korea starves its people. China puts them in concentration camps. Myanmar brutalizes the Rohingya. Boko Haram kidnaps whole villages of women. Nothing? Ukraine? Maybe if these Google employees had the slightest idea what kind of fundamentalist oppressive they're supporting, Hamas, the Houthis, Hezbollah, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, they might take it a little easier on the world's greatest monster, Genocide Joe. Genocide, by the way, is when you want to wipe out an entire people. That's the stated goal of Hamas. That's what from the river to the sea means. Hamas would do that to Israel, but can't. Israel could do that to them, but doesn't.
And look, this is about as clear as it could be. And it comes back to an argument that was put a long time ago. I believe that it originated with Alan Dershowitz. And what Professor Dershowitz said is that there is a profound difference between the Palestinian side and the Israeli side. Because everybody knows that if the Palestinians decided to put down their arms and their rockets and their missiles and their weapons, there would be peace tomorrow. And everybody also knows that if Israel decided to disarm, put down their guns and missiles and tanks and all the rest of it, that there would be genocide tomorrow. And it would not be genocide perpetrated by Jewish people. It would be genocide perpetrated against Jewish people. And this comes at a time when there is a new survey that came out about where the American people stand in all of this. And the interesting thing here is, how is this going to impact the presidential election? Will Joe Biden get some credit and win some support because he hasn't buckled to these terrorists, or in some way said, okay, I hear your side? No, what he's done is remain pretty strongly supportive of Israel. And certainly most Israelis recognize that. What has Trump said about the ongoing conflict that is claiming truly many victims in Gaza? And what Trump has said, number one, he said this would never have happened if I had been president, which it seems to me is a dubious claim. The second thing he has said is that any Jewish person who votes for Biden is someone who hates his religion and hates Israel, which is basically a way of saying that Trump believes that the best way you determine who's a good Jew and who is a committed member of the Jewish community and adherent of the Jewish faith, that the key determinant of that is whether or not you vote for Trump. And if you vote for Trump, then okay. If you don't vote for Trump, well, then how can you consider yourself either a friend of Israel or a loyal American Jew? We will be right back with more on the ongoing battle coming up on the MedVet Show.
You know, Michael, I have stayed away from talk radio for months, but you know, today you have brought me back with a vengeance.
Good.
This is the Michael Medved Show. Show.
And on the Michael Medved Show, in the midst of all of the universities and the crackdowns on anti-Israel protesters who have taken over their campuses this week, the protesters demand that the colleges divest themselves from companies connected to Israel. And this, by the way, is not just Israeli companies that are involved in the defense forces. It's any Israeli companies that they're wanting divestment on. And the entire idea that students who are enrolled in a given college, and the chances are that in most of these Ivy League schools, the majority of students get some financial aid from the university. That financial aid is possible because they have endowment money. In other words, what they have is they have money that has been very well invested And in fact, there's a famous guy named David Swanson who guided the Yale Endowment for years and guided it very successfully so that Yale got up to $41 billion in endowment money. And that goes to help students whose parents are not wealthy if they qualify to go back into the university. And when you talk about going into the university, one of the positive changes in university life is that Yale and Harvard and most of the leading Ivy League schools have now gone back to using tests, have gone back to using aptitude tests, and tests that actually proved to be a much better predictor of how the student is going to do and perform academically at the university as opposed to just relying on grades, because grades are by their very nature far more subjective. And you've all known this. Everybody's known this. Sometimes there are teachers who just hate your guts. At least that has been my experience, and it's tough to get a break in terms of grades. And then there are other times, and by the way, it's one of the reasons that if you look at grades across the country in high schools, girls get much better grades than boys. They do. And is that entirely because they are smarter? Some of it is because they are smarter. It's because their writing is more legible. That was always kind of a problem for me. The writing is more legible, and they are less obstreperous in class. And basically, not just female teachers, who were always the bulk of secondary school teachers in the past, and primary school teachers, a lot of times just have an easier time with girls. But does that mean that girls do better academically always? Well, right now they are the majority, and it's a clear majority of people who graduate from these elite universities, which means that the people who are making most of this trouble, I don't know if anyone has broken it down for males or females or who they are. The one thing that a lot of people have noticed on television is there really aren't many, quote, people of color who are part of these demonstrators. They are overprivileged white kids. And meanwhile, there is much more about this that is puzzling. And part of what is puzzling is that the Democrats are being very slow in condemning the demonstrators, partially because they're afraid of dividing the party, because there are leading Democrats like AOC and like Ilhan Omar who are unapologetically pro-Hamas. That is not the case on the Republican side. There are some Republicans who may be leaning isolationist, but I don't know of anyone in the Republican Party who is pro-Hamas and anti-Israel. It just doesn't exist on that side of things politically. And there's a new Harvard Capps-Harris survey that showed that an overwhelming majority of Americans say that we support Israel and its war against Hamas. The militant group, says the story, the militant group running the Gaza Strip, according to a new poll. The Harvard Capps-Harris survey showed 80% of registered voters, the people who are going to pick the next president, said they support Israel more in this war, while 20% said they support Hamas more. Okay, you can do the math. That's a ratio of 4-1. That is in line with the poll's findings from last month when 79% indicated they support Israel more. Okay, this is important because what it indicates is that if people in the Biden administration and in the Biden campaign are reluctant to come out very clearly in condemning these overprivileged, spoiled brat rioters. If they are hesitating in that, it's going to do damage to Biden's campaign and any chance he had for reelection. There's a Columbia University professor whose name I do not know, but he was speaking to Lawrence Jones of Fox News, who had a microphone, but it wasn't labeled Fox News for understandable reasons. And the protester had this to say, and remember, a faculty member. This is clip 12.
How do you feel about them taking over the building right now?
I think that their cause is a just cause, and I hope that the administration really hears their demands. I think they're just demands.
Do you feel like it was right to hold three of the janitor workers hostage with inside of the building?
I think that's a really false narrative.
That's what the janitors are saying, that they weren't allowed to leave.
I think that that's a really false narrative.
Even if the janitors are saying that, you're saying that that's not true.
I think that it's a really false narrative that the students took anyone hostage.
How do you feel about some of the Jewish students saying that they don't feel safe here on campus?
I think that this is also a really false narrative that's being promoted.
Do you think October 7th and the attack that happened is a false narrative? Do you believe that some of the women were raped?
My colleague just came back. One
so this is what happened.
Can you get out of my face, please?
Notice she wouldn't answer. And good for him and following up about the question. I mean, do you believe here is the amazing thing about that. Hamas is not denying it anymore because they put forward videos that they took very proudly. They took videos of themselves torturing and raping and killing people. And they have promised that they will do more. So why should it be a false narrative that people who support Hamas and identify with Hamas and clearly see themselves on that side should imitate Hamas, which took 240 hostages, many of whom have already been killed and killed partially because of the conditions they're living in. They sent out the a video recently of this young dual citizen, American and Israeli, who whose forearm had been blown off, his hand and his forearm by a grenade. And there he was with his half of his arm missing, pleading with the world basically to get him out of captivity. Do you think that it might add a little bit of force to some of the arguments of the people who are demonstrating if they actually also demonstrated on behalf of innocent hostages who were doing nothing? They were enjoying a music festival or were at home on a Jewish holiday with their families and then had situations where the 4-year-old Abigail Adan, that 4-year-old hostage, saw her parents murdered in front of her. I mean, what they're talking about is what exactly? What they're talking about is a total distortion of priorities, morality, decency, and even love of basic life in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
Here's a special discount, 50% off just for being a MedHead annual member. Join today at michaelmedved.com.